the best I can do. So this is our week two of our series called Made to Last. And last week, Pastor Laura Allen preached a sermon entitled All the Single Ladies. And it wasn't just about single ladies. It was about singleness in general. And she did a great job. And if you missed it last week, I would encourage you to go online and listen to that sermon. But today, we turn our attention to our marriage relationships and what we might be able to do to make those into relationships that are made to last. Now, I was going to tell you that the idea for this series actually came from a conversation that I had with one of you. We have a member of our church who is a real estate agent, and I was just having a casual conversation with him, and I said to him, I said, well, now how's the real estate business? Are things picking up for you nowadays? And he said, his response surprised me. He said, Pastor Michael, honestly, business never really slowed down for me. And right now, I don't have enough houses to show. I can't keep enough inventory. He said, now, I hate one of the things that's driving my business right now, but my business is good. And so I was curious. I said, well, wait a minute. You said you hate one of the things that's driving your business. What does that mean? Tell me a little bit more about that. And he said, well, unfortunately, the thing that has been driving my business a lot lately has been divorce. Because you have two people who own one house who all of a sudden need to get rid of that one house and buy two. And that's been driving my business. And I thought, gosh, that's just the saddest thing. Now, sometimes divorce is inevitable, but it's always painful. And we know this because even if we haven't been through divorce ourselves, we know and we love people who have, people in our families. There's probably not a family in this sanctuary this morning that hasn't been touched in one way or another by divorce. And we know it leaves a wake of brokenness and pain. And nobody goes into a marriage hoping for that. So what do we need to do to try and avoid that? What are some ways that we can work on making our relationships made to last? Or is it even possible to have a love that's made to last? Now, as I've been thinking about this, the thought occurred to me that there are some forces at work in our culture, some things that are sort of in the water in our culture that work very hard against having a love that's made to last. And so I want to talk about a couple of those this morning. I want to talk to you about a couple of cultural myths that I think are out there and are pervasive. And the way I want to talk about the first one, I want to start by talking about a popular TV show. Now, some of you may be fans of this show. I don't know if you watch The Bachelor or not. But about the time I really started thinking seriously about this sermon today, it was around the time there was a lot of fanfare about the brand new season of The Bachelor. And that caught my attention. Now, I've never watched the show myself, but I did some research, and I think I've got the storyline. It didn't take much to get the storyline down. So here's what I learned on Wikipedia. Nearly 12 million viewers tune in every week to watch The Bachelor. And here's how it works. There is a guy, The Bachelor, who has 25 beautiful women on this show who are competing for his attention. And they're trying to be the one that he picks at the very end, and the one who gets the final coveted rose. Now, they are not always the nicest to each other. In fact, they're cutthroat. They stab each other in the back, and it's always drama. And it's all in this attempt to have love with this bachelor. To be the one that has that love that's made to last. And it's called reality TV. And it sounds very realistic, right? I mean, before I was married, that happened to me all the time. I always had 25 gorgeous women fighting over me. So it's really realistic in my mind. But the myth is that if this bachelor will just choose the right person, if he'll just find that right chemistry, if he'll just give that coveted rose to the right woman, then the idea is that they could have a love that's made to last. They could live happily ever after and it could all be great. And it's not just the idea behind the bachelor. That myth is in the water. That if we'll just find the right person, if we'll choose that right person, if we'll find chemistry, you know, when sparks fly, if we'll just find our soulmate, whatever that means, if we'll find our soulmate, then we can have a love that's made to last. So that's cultural myth number one, that a love that's made to last is about choosing the right person. And cultural myth number two actually made me think about another famous, probably the most famous love story, which is Romeo and Juliet. And I was thinking about that, and you know the story, Romeo and Juliet, most famous love story ever. They, two families, the Montagues and the Capulets, and they are at war with each other. I mean, they are worse than the Hatfields and the McCoys. They don't like each other at all. In fact, they hate each other. They're worse than the Blue Devils and the Tar Heels. They have no love for each other, and yet their family lines get crossed when a group of Montague boys sneak into a masquerade ball at the Capulets' home. And that's where it happened. Across a crowded room, Romeo glimpses Juliet. And as soon as he gets a glimpse of Juliet, sparks fly. There's chemistry. And instantly, Romeo falls head over heels in love with Juliet, and he can't wait to talk to her and to be with her. He is absolutely in love. And so he sees her from across the crowded room, and immediately he says, "Oh, she doth teach the torches to burn bright." It seems she hangs upon the cheek of night like a rich jewel in an Ethiop's ear. Beauty too rich for use, for earth too dear. So shows a snowy dove trooping with crows as yonder lady o'er fellow shows. The measure done, I'll watch her place of stand and touching hers make blessed my rude hand. Did my heart love till now forswear its sight? For I never saw true beauty till this night. Romeo and Juliet, sparks, chemistry, in love, that kind of head over heels, Cupid shot you through the heart, kind of warm, fuzzy in the pit of your stomach, butterflies fluttering around. That's the kind of love that Romeo and Juliet celebrates, that in love with love kind of feeling. And it brings us to our cultural myth number two, which is the idea that a love that's made to last is about feelings, emotions, passion. It's this idea that a love that's made to last is about chemistry. That's in our culture. That's what we think. If we can just keep that fire, that passion, those feelings going, then we can have a love that's made to last. We got Valentine's Day coming up, and it's a holiday that has evolved, or maybe devolved, depending on how you look at it, into this holiday that celebrates that kind of love, that ooey-gooey, fiery, kind of passionate love. And a lot of money will be spent in the next couple of weeks on chocolates and roses and jewelry, all in a quest for that kind of love. But if you want a love that's made to last, it won't be built on that. Because the thing about feelings is they're fickle. Emotions are ephemeral. They're short-lived. They're here one minute, gone the next. And they might come and go a lot of times over the course of your life, even for your spouse. But if you want to build a love that's made to last, that will not be the foundation for it. So if we do want to build a love that's made to last, what should the foundation be? And what does Jesus teach us about love? Well, for that question, we're going to turn to John chapter 13. We're going to pick up reading at verse 34. And this is Jesus talking. I give you a new commandment that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. So here's how I'd like for you to help me this morning. I'd like to turn to a couple of neighbors and channel your inner Tina Turner and ask them, what's love got to do with it? Can you do that for me? What's love got to do with it? Now, for the sake of transparency, I need to tell you right out of the box that the context of this passage from John chapter 13 is not marriage relationships. The context is actually the Last Supper, the last night of Jesus' life. And these words that Jesus uttered are some of his departing words to his closest friends. So Jesus is not talking to married couples. He's talking to his disciples. But I was thinking that, you know, if Jesus commands his disciples, if he gives them this new commandment that they have to love one another, then how much more should we obey this commandment when it pertains to the very person who should be the most important person in the world to us? In other words, if Jesus makes us, if Jesus commands us, if I have to love Chad Turner, then how much more should I obey Jesus' commandment to love my wife, whom God has given me to spend my lifetime with? I mean, how much more should that be true that if we're going to obey this commandment, we have to start in our own homes? And so that's where all this starts. Now, I want you to notice what Jesus exactly says to his disciples. Here's what he says. I give you a new commandment. Love one another. As I have loved you, you also should love one another. The first thing that stands out to me in this passage is that word new. And because I was curious about this word new, I did a little word study on it. I looked it up. And the word that's translated into English for new is a Greek word, kainos. Can you say that with me? Kainos. That was kind of pitiful. Kainos. And it can mean new. But it can also mean unprecedented, unheard of, uncommon. So what Jesus is really saying is, what I'm about to tell you is unprecedented. It's unheard of. This what I'm about to tell you is new in all sorts of ways. I am telling you that love, I am making love a commandment. Now I know that you think love is about feelings. I know you think it's about something you in the pit of your stomach. I know you think it's about emotion. But I know you think that love is a noun. But I am telling you, that's not real love. Real love is my new, unprecedented, uncommon, unheard of commandment. And here's the thing. You can't command emotions. I can't say to you this morning, be happy. I mean, I can, but it won't do any good. I can say that, but it won't do any good if you're not already happy. Because you can't command emotion. But according to Jesus, you can command love. Which means that love is not an emotion. Love's not a noun. Jesus is really saying, I'm going to give you this new, unprecedented, unheard of commandment. And this is going to work in your marriage relationships too. So get a pen, write it down. This is my new commandment. Make love a verb. Make love a verb. Love isn't a noun. It's not a fuzzy feeling in the pit of your stomach. It's not a rush of passion or emotion. It's not about sparks that fly or some kind of chemistry. Love is a verb. Make love a verb. Now, I know you don't normally do this, but there are these foreign objects in your pew called hymnals. I want you to pull them out for me just a second. And I want you to turn to page 865 in your hymnals. I'm having you turn to the wedding service in our hymnal, and if you have trouble finding it, it's right next to the funeral service. I don't know what to make of that, but it is true. It's right next to the funeral service. And so what we have on page 864, we have the greeting and the welcome to the wedding service. And then when we really get down to business on page 865, what we start with is this declaration of intention. We're going to ask the couple who's coming to be married what their intentions are. And here's what we say. And we start with the bride. Susie, will you have Johnny to be your husband, to live together in holy marriage? Will you love him, comfort him, honor and keep him in sickness and in health, and forsaking all others, be faithful to him as long as you both shall live? That's the question we ask. We actually turn right around and ask the groom the same question. Will you take so-and-so to be your spouse, to live together in holy marriage? Will you love them, comfort, honor and keep in sickness and in health, and forsaken all others, be faithful to them as long as you both shall live? Do you notice anything about that question? It's a question that's framed in the present tense. Notice that we ask, do you? We don't ask, do you love? We ask, will you love? Because if you ask, do you love, it implies that love is a noun. But when you ask, will you love, it implies that love is a verb. Love is action. It's something that you do. And so when we have couples come forward to make their vows to each other, we don't ask them, do you love? We ask, will you love? And that's because we know full well that when you promise to be married to the same person for a lifetime, to spend day in and day out with them, there are going to be times where you don't even like that person. In fact, there might be times when you actually want to choke them out. And so we make you come up here to the front, and we make you stand on these steps, and we make you promise that you won't do that. We make you promise that you will love, that you'll make love a verb, that you'll love in action, even when you don't feel all that loving. When you don't feel love now, we make you promise to love verb. See, right here, we make you promise that because we believe that a love that is made to last is not about love as a noun. It's not about chemistry. It's about commitment. A love that's made to last is not about chemistry, it's about commitment. It's about making a commitment to make love a verb when it's easy and when it's terribly difficult. It's about commitment. See, our culture is wrong. The Bachelor is wrong. A love that's made to last is not about choosing the right person. A love that's made to last is about choosing to be the right person. It's about choosing to live into this commitment to every day, even when it's hard, to make love a verb, to love your spouse no matter how mad she might have made you the night before. We are promising to make love a verb, to choose to be the right person. And that is the key to making love a love that will last. In his book, Making Love Last a Lifetime, Adam Hamilton tells a story. He was in seminary and he was up late one night. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. He was writing a paper for school. And his wife, LaVon, was in the bedroom next door. She was already asleep. And he said, while he's up writing this paper, he realized something. He said, all of a sudden I realized that I wasn't in love with my wife anymore. And it was very sobering because he said, I realized I don't love her now. So here's what he decided to do. 2 o'clock in the morning, he put his shoes, put his clothes on, and he got up and he went to the 24-hour grocery store near his apartment. And he went into the floral section and he bought a dozen roses. And then he bought a card. And he came back home, middle of the night, and wrote out all of the reasons he fell in love with his wife to start with. He conjured up old memories, and he tried to bring all that back, and he wrote it in this card, and he told her why he loved her. He put love into action. He made love a verb. Even when he wasn't feeling love a noun, he made love a verb. You know what he says happened? Over time, after day in and day out, loving his wife in action, even when he didn't feel this rush of emotion or passion or fear, making love a verb, day in and day out, over time, love noun came back. Because that's the thing about love as a noun. You can, your actions can lead your heart. Your actions can lead your heart. You can love in action. And then that love as a noun, it's going to come and go, and it probably will come and go a number of times over your lifetime together. But Jesus says, this is my commandment. Love one another. Action. Make love a verb. I heard Andy Stanley say one time that he thinks that Jesus would probably be the worst marriage counselor ever. He said, can you just imagine somebody going to the Jesus Counseling Center and going in to sit down with Jesus and saying, Jesus, my wife drives me crazy. She's always doing this. She never does that. I don't know what I'm going to do. She drives me crazy. Andy Stanley said, I can just imagine Jesus saying, well, now, wait a minute. Are you loving her? Well, Jesus, I used to. No. You don't used to. You used to noun. You don't used to verb. I'm telling you verb. I'm telling you to love in action. Go home and make love a verb. Go home and put your spouse's needs above your own. Go home and love like that. Love in action. Jesus says, I give you a new, unprecedented, unheard of commandment that you love one another. And then he goes a step further. And he says, just as I have loved you, so also you should love one another. And just in case that wasn't quite clear enough, very soon after Jesus uttered those words and gave his disciples this brand new commandment, he went out into the darkness to offer up his life for theirs. He made love a verb. And thanks be to God for that. Well, what's love got to do with it? When it comes to a love that's made to last, what's love got to do with it? It depends. Are we talking about love as a noun? Because if we are, then very little. That kind of love has very little to do with a love that's made to last. But if we're talking about love as a verb, well, that has everything to do with it. Make love a verb. Amen.